You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe. These are my partners in soccer, Susanna Collins, David Goss, and Hall of Famer, Kalen Carr. Times two Hall of Fame. Yeah, we have a big show coming up.
We're gonna HOF.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Allianz Field. It's opening, FYI. Kai Kamara's fifth all-time in MLS goals. LA's about to sign a center back that you all know from Costa Rica, Giancarlo Gonzalez. And we're going to talk to Martin Vasquez about player development. But the big news is you, Kalen. Oh, you're a Hall of Famer. I put in my ballot. Didn't know that Maybe. I could vote for you.
You are too kind, my friend. Yes. I think I was the only one who could show up. The availability of Steve Birnbaum and Stefan Fry, but going back to Berkeley.
This is the World Soccer Hall of Fame?
Right.
Like you, Ronaldinho, Pirlo.
Yeah, Zidane.
The world of Berkeley, which is its own planet. You didn't know. Yes.
Oh, got it.
Now, is this based solely on your college career performance, or does this take into account your entire career and body of work?
Extra time appearances.
Yes.
It all adds up. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the way I
2-time All-Conference, 27 goals scored, first-round draft pick, 27 appearances on ETR.
Are those actual stats?
No, I don't know, Kalen.
Okay, because I looked up on Wikipedia. I was curious, who else might make it? And I looked up, list of accomplished University of California Berkeley alumni in sports. Servando Carrasco's here. Andrew Jakeson's here.
Hector Jimenez.
Not on this one.
What do you mean?
It's
Wikipedia,
a flawed
man.
List.
Oh, forget Wikipedia.
Wow. Look at the picture on Kalen Carr's college bio.
Please describe it as a podcast.
That's true. He is probably as tan as I've ever seen
him. Susanna, what do you think about this?
He's got a fro going on.
Which version of Kalen is this?
He's got an incredible afro going on.
Oh, that's kind of Sanjaya. Kalen.
Whoa.
It's a little.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
We've seen that before.
Whoa. I don't even know.
There is a whole evolution of Kalen's look to where he got now.
Right. Just being
and
cool.
It was a heck of a journey.
If you are watching on YouTube, which you should definitely do, there's half this table is team like cool hats. Half this side of the table.
Well, you called me a partner in soccer, but there are four people at this table. Three are wearing the same jersey, like they play for the same team, and one is not. I am the one who is not.
We offered you a greener goals parlay jersey. There's a box of them that we said you can wear one if you'd like. You said no.
What?
Look, but that is a good transition. Thank you. Fourth annual Greener Goals Week of Service.
That was one of my seven assists in 2002 by Kalen Carr on the couch.
In a giving mood that year. Never again.
The goal for Greener Goals is to reduce the league's greenhouse gas footprint and raise awareness about environmental issues. Of course, part of that, as you know, are the Adidas and Parlay eco-friendly kits. These are made from threads from upcycled plastic waste intercepted by Parlay from remote islands, shorelines, and in coastal communities. These are on sale. You can buy the Parlay jerseys at MLSstore.com. They're actually really cool. I really like this year's version.
Weeby, did you get in the Hudson to help out?
Did not do that. Did not dive in the river for this. But Parlay did their part.
I like the color scheme.
Yeah, I do too.
Nice little color scheme. Wish they came in ladies' sizes. I'm just going to throw that out there. But
you're still making it look good.
Thanks.
You're rocking it.
We're trying.
Earth Day weekend is when these things get worn. They might already be sold out. So if you're listening right now and you want one, you should go now and do it. Okay, let's get to the soccer.
Bye now.
Let's get to the soccer. That sound good? Week 7. Allianz Field opening on Saturday. Minnesota United unveiling their brand new $250 million plus privately funded stadium at 5 p.m. Eastern against New York City FC. Myself, Susanna Collins, we will be there just soaking in all the atmosphere. I went back and thought about this, did a little bit of research. Since 2017, 5 stadiums have opened in MLS. Orlando, Atlanta, LAFC, DC, and Minnesota. You and I were at the first games at LAFC and DC, Dave. We've been to Orlando. We've been to Atlanta. Incredible stuff there. Minnesota seems like it's going to be just the next step, but it also feels like it's just kind of old hat, which is incredible knowing where this league has come from, where any soccer stadium was to be celebrated. And Crew Stadium for years now, Maffrey Stadium, was kind of this like, oh my God, we got it done. Well, now it's just, it's normal.
It's the new norm.
And that's a beautiful thing.
It's a wonderful thing that we should all celebrate. I mean, it's crazy. Last year alone, it was, you know, Audi Field, Bank of California Stadium. And it just becomes this regular occurrence that we're making trips for these stadium openings. And the next one always seems to top the one before that. And so we keep setting the bar so high. And I cannot wait. Everything I have read, everything I've seen, the pictures of Allianz Field just looks insane. There's a beer hall with 96 beers on tap. Like, I remember at Avaya being like, that, you know, that big bar that they have at the end being
biggest
like,
outdoor
like,
bar.
This is amazing.
Call it by its name, Lobina.
Lobina.
It's the biggest outdoor bar on the West Coast.
But again, it's outdoor bar in North America.
But it's just, largest different than biggest?
Yeah.
Each one has to have, you know, a kind of a defining characteristic like that. And it's just, I'm so excited to watch a
Is the 96, is that a reference to, was it 96 bottles of beer? Is that?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. 99 bottles of beer.
Oh.
But if you take one down, pass it
or
around.
Maybe the founding year of MLS?
Perhaps. Oh. I don't know if it was quite that planned out.
Okay.
What was Let's say it was.
What was it like in your day, Kalen? Have you been part? You've been a part of stadium openings. You SeatGeek, now SeatGeek in Bridgeview. You were a part of that one.
Yep. And in Houston as
BBVA.
BBVA, yeah. It was amazing because I saw the transformation where we were going from playing, well, actually my first year in Chicago, we were training up at Lakeview College. Susanna, you would know this Chicago person.
Yeah.
And we were driving an hour north with, it was me, Zach Thornton, Jack Stewart, all pile in a car every morning, drive an hour outside, and we're training.
Zach Thornton gets his own row, I assume.
Big Z. He was like, if you're not outside in time when the car arrives, you are in trouble.
I
don't want to disappoint Big Z. But you know, then we went from there to actually going and getting our own ground where the training ground was just outside, and then same thing at Houston. We were training at University of Houston Stadium, and then suddenly the training field opened down in Houston Athletic Sports Park, and then the stadium. It changed the entire vibe of going to work, the culture around the team, a place for the fans to show up, and the energy at the stadium. And that's the thing that's most exciting is the experience of going to these games now. And you see, I think Allianz is going to be, it could be up there for top stadium in the U.S. Mm. I really think so, because if you look across the ones that stand out to me, the ones, of course, you've got some of the bigger ones that were, you know, that are dual sport specific like Atlanta, but the ones that are just for soccer, the ones that stand out are Sporting Kansas City, New York Red Bull, and Bank of California. I feel like this one is going to be right up in there in that top class of stadiums in MLS.
The other thing you see, and you mentioned two clubs you played for in this scenario for Minnesota, is you come into the league in one stadium, and this moment is a lot of times like the rebirth or the next step for the club. And we've seen it with DC United, which is on a different level because of the history they had, but you see it with Orlando, you saw it with Philadelphia because they started for a few months in a different stadium, and it's just a club, you know, comes into the league, everyone's excited, it has one identity, and then if you handle it right, which is what we've been talking about for weeks now with Minnesota setting records for their wins, their road wins, all that stuff so far this year, this can be the next step for your franchise and or your club, and this is where, you know, a lot of times people's memories will go back to. Weeby couldn't even think of what stadiums opened since 2017 because Orlando, you only think of it from their new stadium on.
Right.
You're not thinking about the Orange.
I also want to add, as far as commuting stories, I used to drive back and forth in Houston to training 15 minutes with Jeff Cameron and Corey Ash, and you'd be sweating 6 pounds of sweat coming off you usually every day we'd train, and we'd have to lay down towels in the back of the car not to like mess up Jeff's nice leather seats. So really the biggest difference when you get your own stadium is just commute time. It just cuts down on commute.
I just want to shout out to everybody in Minnesota that made this happen, from Buzz Lagos from way back in the day and now Dr. Bill McGuire. I mean, this is a soccer community that for many years just kind of assumed that professional soccer was going to be gone, that one day they were going to wake up or after an NSL final, you know, snap your fingers and all of a sudden that era is over and pro soccer is gone. I think what they've done to get to this point is incredible. What Buzz Lagos has done, if you don't know his story, go back and read. I mean, he basically, like, through his own credit cards and just like sweat equity, kept this thing going for years and years and years. You go from the Kicks to the Thunders to the Stars, and you're talking about NSC and now to TCF Bank and a bunch of other stadiums in between. When I went down there 2 years ago, you really got the feeling that there were a lot of times where this community felt like it was slipping away. And not just felt like, knew it was. because the finances weren't there, the culture wasn't there, people cared about it, but it just didn't get going. And so to see it get going, to see there be a literal cathedral to the game in St. Paul, Minnesota, for me it's special, but for them, I can only imagine what this day is going to be like. It's a celebration. It is like, to not to make this religious, but like kind of like going to church, giving thanks, having, you know, a transformative moment that brings everybody together in the same building for the foreseeable future. I mean, this is special for Minnesota, just like it was special for Orlando, just like it's special for LA, just like it's special for DC fans and Kansas City fans who saw their entire, you know, existence changed by that stadium, and as it will be for Cincinnati and Nashville and Austin and Miami, who are trying to put up their like flamingo wing, you know, renderings. If you haven't seen those, they're incredible.
I
just give thanks that we are in a time of soccer in this country now, and not when it was about
cool,
to slip away,
right? Like, there is such a, there's a cool factor here that we should address. Everything, like, when you look at the pictures of Allianz Field and Bank of California and Audi Field, it is cool. And so for young kids, especially, like, young fans who see these incredible stadiums, they're like, I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
Like, I want to go watch a match there. It's, like, the new, hot, cool thing to do. And we keep, I said it before, but, you know, you just, they keep one-upping each other in these stadiums, and so people want to be a part of it. You want to go, and I think that's so important and so awesome in growing this fan base in North America, and everybody in Minnesota should feel so proud that they were able to get this done, and it looks so cool.
It looks amazing.
We should also note that the teams that are still searching for stadiums, seeing this happen and seeing clubs that maybe thought at one point soccer wasn't going to survive here or that it was going down, reimagine themselves and have this culmination religious experience as you're describing is a good thing too, to be able to see that happen on the biggest stage,
yeah,
and then inspire them to be able to get this done.
Drive them forward. I love so much about the stadium. We'll be there for MLS Match Day Central on Saturday covering the whole thing, so tune into that on all the MLS channels. The way they did the seats, kind of the speckling and how they weaved
cool.
the loon into all of it.
The red seat? Did you see the red seat?
Yeah, for a VIP every single time. It's basically the loon's eye. I mean, it just, the attention to detail by Dr. Bill McGuire, and I keep saying his name in that because he literally has paid attention to every last detail, like the way the carpets run, how things are located, the clock that they put up from NSC. I mean, all these different things they've weaved together to really, I hope and believe, and that's what my friends in Minnesota are telling me, truly reflect the fan culture there. 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, Minnesota NYCFC. Minnesota, 3 wins and 5 on the road. They want to start it off with Wonderwall at home. Want to get that win, keep that tradition going. We'll see how it goes down. Some other good games coming up this weekend here. Houston, San Jose is your Univision Twitter game on Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Kalen, we had a debate on mass confrontation. In which
you
we
did?
Yeah, we did. got a little heated, which we basically said that we didn't think Houston was in the upper echelon of MLS teams, despite the fact that they haven't lost. Mm. Is there a case to be made that we were wrong? The answer's got to be yes. I lean on
just
you.
Just said it. They lost. They haven't lost.
What do you see from Houston so far this year?
I like this Houston team. I think, you know, the attack is never going to be questioned. It's always been, the questions have always been in the back and whether they can keep from conceding goals.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's Cabezas, when he's healthy, I think changes this team. And so I think if they can keep him, and I think eventually DeMarcus will hopefully come back, get back into that group. But I think they've done a better job of that to begin the season. And then they've also improved their road form, being able to go on the road and win games where in the past, you know, they came in Colorado, they just steamrolled them. And in the past, you haven't seen Houston, even dating back to the times I played there, be successful on the road. It was usually using that home field advantage at BBVA and the heat and the humidity.
The 6 pounds of sweat, yeah.
That's 6 pounds.
Yeah.
That'll get you.
But I think your original point, which is the defense is better, allows them to now go on the road and get points, right? Because they can sit and counter, which is who they are. I think Kyoto and Lease right now are bought in more to help defensively.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to get out and run. You're going to get to do your thing, but you got to give us a little bit to protect these guys. And AJ De La Garza, always the most underrated player in Major League Soccer. Like, just being there, right? Just being in that locker room, being on the field, I think helps them have a presence where last year they were playing two midfielders and like a third string center back at times. And now you have guys who are comfortable as starters, full 90 minutes, and then that makes your midfield feel better about what's going on behind them.
This is an interesting matchup because Houston, San Jose, if you remember the history, I mean, Houston is San Jose moved and then San Jose arrive afterwards. Tommy Thompson, we'll see if he makes another guarantee, but this game, interesting in the Western Conference. I want to talk Kai Kamara. We should have done it on Monday. We didn't do it. Susanna, fifth all-time in MLS goals, 115. Colorado take on DC at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus on Saturday. But it's all about Kai on today's show. Like, what an accomplishment for this guy. What a legacy that he's leaving for someone who has, I don't know how to put it, but kind of a mixed MLS career. Yeah. He's not like a one-team guy. He's not a couple-team guy. He's not a forever double-digit goal scorer. He actually has played for seven clubs and eight different stints. Like, he's kind of bounced around, and yet here he is, fifth all-time.
I know. Well, Kaylin and I had a Kai discussion on TWIM earlier this week. Kaylin knowing Kai very well. Same draft class. They played together in their...
You guys played PDL together?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's 18 years old.
I was thinking a lot about this because when that happened and he's fifth on the list, I was kind of like, I feel like this happened very sort of quietly. It's just, you know, he's not a guy that we are having these big conversations about, you know, in the way that we're like, we're on Wando watch and all of this. You know, he kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And I think it's because he has played for so many teams that we don't, you know, if he had done this all for one team, it's so celebrated by that fan base. But because he's kind of bounced around so much, I think that that's almost sort of, I don't want to say take the shine off of it, but it's sort of because it's been dispersed.
Yeah.
It's not so celebrated and not so focused. But it's ridiculous what he's been able to do. And he scores goals every single place that he goes. Like, that's just what he does. And Kaylin can talk more about that. But I mean, he's a guy that we should be talking about.
And I think we should celebrate him for a lot of reasons, because he came out of the college system, because he came into us, because it took him 5 years to get double-digit goals. I mean, this wasn't a guy that walked in like a Kyle Larin and just from day one was banging him in. He grew, he developed both as a player and I think undoubtedly as a person in this league, and then also made a move off of it. You know, if you look at his career, he just has five seasons with double-digit goals.
Yeah,
it took him a while to get there.
And he left for 2 years to go play in the Premier League. So he went to Norwich and then down to Middlesbrough. But that was at the prime of his career. He's at 115 right now, about 20. What is that, 30 off the pace? No, 20 off the pace?
Yeah.
All time?
Yeah, it's 30 off the pace. Yeah, right. So Landon has 145.
30.
But he never gets hurt either. So there's like a conceivable place in my mind where like people need goal scorers. Kai Kamara scores goals. He doesn't get hurt.
Put those 2 years back in, see where he's at.
Yeah, for sure.
So to me, yeah, I mean, Kai was a guy also that was overlooked most of his youth career. He came to this country in his teens, okay, and then he was playing right in the backyard at Cal State Dominguez Hills. And I was playing with him in PDL. We had this legendary PDL team that had Jordan Harvey, Sasha Kleshtin, Robbie Rogers, Dan Kennedy, Tyson Wall,
Brad Evans,
myself and Kai up front. So we had a pretty stacked
squad.
Team. But all those guys were mostly at UCLA. They were at Berkeley. They were playing at UC Santa Barbara, bigger schools. And Kai was the Cal State Dominguez Hills kid, but was banging in goals. And the legendary Siggy Schmidt brought Kai and I in and allowed us to train with the Galaxy in the offseason or in their summertime. Really identified Kai. He ended up drafting him by the Columbus Crew, giving him the start to his career. I know they have a very special relationship between those two. But I always felt like Kai had a little bit of that chip on his shoulder, a guy that wasn't always, you know, the cream of the crop or the first name off the list. And I think that has really fueled him on to be wanting to be the guy. And at times when it hasn't gone well, it's when he hasn't really been the guy in that team. And the coaches that have been able to bring Kai in, tell him, hey, you're loved, you're valued, you're important, we're going to build this system around you, that's where he's been most successful.
You saw that with Peter Ramiz in that first double-digit season. Said, hey, look, you've been miscast a little bit, we're going to just put you as a matchup disadvantage, and you're going to crush people. He scored some incredible goals that year, and then to go back to the missing year and a half or 2 years, he came right back and scored 22 for Columbus Crew SC. Like, think if he had those other years with Greg Berhalter. Think if that had lasted a little bit longer. It didn't. But maybe that's part of Kai's legacy as well.
Well, one of the nice things, at least from my experience in Major League Soccer, is everything Kaylin said, I echo. And he hasn't always been celebrated, but 2015, around MLS Cup, he was the star of that MLS Cup. And when he rolled his ankle in training, it was like the whole thing came down, not for the Crew, for everyone. Yeah. It was
or who didn't roll his ankle.
Right, exactly.
It was like, did he not? Is this like gamesmanship?
But he earned what he got that year in terms of the coverage and the respect and being the face of that game. scored a goal as well, but and had 22 that year. So that was the year for me where I was like, this guy got his due. Like, this is finally his chance to be the centerpiece, be the face of something, and prove that he could lift it to that level. And then the last few years, I agree with you that he can go higher because he has things that are never going to go away. Right, he has a goal scorer mentality. He has that size so he can compete in the box. And when you look at the way teams have brought him in over the last few years, it's like, we know what we will get from you. There are so many unknowns in Major League Soccer. I could bring in a TAM player from any country in the world. I don't know what I'm going to get. You can almost guarantee, maybe good or bad at times, from Kai Kamara what you're going to get. And that's why I think over the next 3-4 years, similar to what Will Bruins brought to Seattle, I think teams are going to continue to bring
him. Can I say one more thing? I think we could have done more to push Kai forward as far as a face of this league. I really think so, because now we're sort of reflecting and saying, whoa, this kind of snuck up on us. But around that time, I think he was a little bit ahead of the time as somebody who is, we talk about building stars, building personalities, building guys that have come up, you know. Now I feel like we're celebrating Wando and Kai, but I feel like we can do more to celebrate these type of players. Kai embraced social media. He's been great with the fans. He's
great with us.
Celebrations. He's always willing and eager to do things. So I'm glad to see Kai get his due now.
I just want to throw out some stats for Kai here. 115 goals, 44 assists, and 320 MLS games. But if you look at the other top 10 here, and all these guys are legends in their own way, Kai basically has the fewest, other than BWP and Taylor Twellman, PKs. He just has 10 PK goals all time. The guys in front of him, Jaime Moreno has 44. Jeff Cunningham has 20. Wando has 25. Landon Donovan has 31. So if this guy took PKs...
Now you see why he's starting these fights,
well,
right?
Yeah, that's why the crew situation didn't work out so well. But the other one that I find funny here, because we all know that Kai is an unrepentant shooter. Nobody in the top 10 has taken more shots than Kai Kamara in Major League Soccer. Uncorked it 936 times. Congratulations to Kai for hitting this.
Shooter's got
to
shoot.
Love
Shooter's got to shoot. He's got what? He's got, I think, 18 to get to Jaime Moreno's 133 and 30 to get to Landon Donovan. We'll see how far he can get in his career. Congratulations to Kai Kamara. You're talking about L.A., though. Let's go back to L.A. Let's go back to the Galaxy, because the news is not yet official, but it basically is. Kevin Baxter at the L.A. Times is reporting that Giancarlo Gonzalez, the 31-year-old Costa Rican center back, will sign for the club, maybe even make his debut on Saturday against the Union. That game's at 10:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. 71 caps. He's been with Serie A since, 2014, when Crew SC sold him?
He left right after the World Cup.
Yeah, to Palermo. He's basically made like 115 appearances-ish in Italy during that time. It sounds like, according to Jeff Carl at ESPN, that this is going to cost a good bit for the Galaxy because he was sold. He has to come in through the allocation order. So you're looking at $400K, according to Jeff Carlisle, in TAM that they will send to Orlando City in order to get this spot.
Plus the $500 for the international spot to sign him, plus the money they're going to spend on him. It's a lot of money.
It's an investment.
It's a lot of money. It's necessary. It's a player they've not had since Omar Gonzalez left. A true center back that you can rely on to manage the back line, to move pieces, who can defend 1v1 and also defend in space. So he has the ability where if things get broken down, he can make a play, and that's what he was so good with Columbus, but also he can organize a back line, and that's what he's been so good with Costa Rica, is five-man back line. He's the middle of it. He's the one that's communicating to, you know, the guys around him. He's the one that lets the wing backs push up. So he brings basically everything they're missing. The question is always, you know, he hasn't played consistently this year in Serie A. He's 31 years old. Where is he at when he comes back? But on paper, it's everything that LA Galaxy needed.
Also, who's his partner? Diego Polenta, the recent signing, but he hadn't played for 6 months before he got in. He's looked rusty. Daniel Steris has looked really, really good. I mean, there's a big decision for Guillermo Barrichello as to how he brings him in, who he pushes out of the lineup, and how he continues to build this team forward, Susanna, because I people always accuse me of being a Galaxy stan,
yeah,
and
you
I'm
are.
Not. But I get excited.
Are you wearing LAFC?
No. Yeah, no, I didn't. No. I'm rocking the LAFC jersey just to maintain a little bit of credibility here. But this team, I think, is one that we've seen some good things from. We've seen good results, but we haven't seen the best from. And then that's what the rest of the season is about, is building toward that.
Yeah, I mean, we're only 7 weeks in, but they've only allowed 6 goals all season. I mean, this was a team that was like leaking goals last year. So they have improved. And whether that's been Scalotto, you know, and just a new defensive mentality, they have improved in the back, but that's always going to be, when you look at that roster,
that was the issue.
That back is always going to be the issue. So anything they can do to help them and shore that up, I think is going to benefit. And certainly a guy with, you know, this kind of experience. I don't see this as a bad move.
Weeby's out here like, who do you partner him? That's a better issue than what's our partnership.
Right.
Your 50% of your issue now is solved. So, and all of those guys are going to be better now. That was like one of the issues with Romney and Steris is you push them in as young players, inexperienced center backs with no partner to guide them through this. When you look at what Miazga had, when you look at what Justin Glad had at RSL, like they had guys to help them take those first steps. Galaxy haven't had that in years.
So Jim Curtin had an interesting quote ahead of this match. He saluted Zlatan. People were talking about cheering him, booing him, what should you do? He saluted him. He said, I'm not going to say anything stupid and get myself in trouble and get Zlatan angry. Good idea, Jim Curtin. Good idea. Sporting KC, New York, finish off the weekend, 7 p.m. Eastern on FS1 on Sunday. Got to kind of reevaluate expectations for both right now, I think. Of course, we're not going to talk about that CCL second leg against Monterrey because that happens Thursday night. We're recording this Thursday afternoon.
That epic comeback. The greatest comeback in world soccer.
You trying to set it up? I like that.
Back on Monday to hear about SKC storming back from 5 goals.
I'm interested in this matchup between these two teams because I've been, you know, reading about the articles. I thought Bobby did a really good article on Red Bull and the challenges they faced. And I was listening to Chris Armas's comments about saying that teams have adjusted to the way that the Red Bulls are playing with that high-pressure attack. And then I listened to the interview of ETR. I've been diving deep, by the way.
Yeah, you are. Your research is on point.
But like Peter Vermees came on the show and talked about how he had to adapt his playing style from the high pressure because teams in the league started figuring that out. Then they evolved to this more possession-based style. I think the Red Bulls are still sort of stuck in the middle, but I think more than anything, trying to keep their identity. So to see these two teams match up is going to be interesting. The possession team that has evolved versus the team that still wants to high pressure. How do those things resolve themselves, I think, is going to play out pretty interestingly.
Yeah, that is interesting. I didn't really think about it in that sense. I was thinking about like both of them in their own little camps trying to figure out, okay, Red Bulls, it's been a slow start. We expect to be an MLS Cup contender, Supporters Shield contender. What happens?
Oh, no. I'm all in on this Bobby philosophy thing, man. He's got me. I'm not looking at just the teams anymore.
Yeah,
I'm thinking
sold you on
like
it, huh?
Eight levels deeper than that. Yeah.
Reinvention for Red Bulls. You've talked to a bunch of folks over there, Dave, and you call these USL games as well, where you kind of see the first inklings of what could or might change or what they're going through. What are they going through from your perspective?
They're going through a lot of what Bobby said and what Kalen was talking about, this guy, of just understanding that teams know how to play against them and understanding where the press comes from. They've also lost Tyler Adams, who is an elite talent. And yes, this is a club that has a top-down philosophy and is ready to fill pieces in. And Christian Casteras started to show that. He was away for all of preseason, so he wasn't a guy they were ready to play from week one. Not because they don't think he's good enough, but because he wasn't prepared to. So you'll see him over the next few weeks start to fill in that role. He is going to take it, but he doesn't play the same way as Tyler Adams. He's not a freak athlete. He's not covering the ground. He controls the ball, and it's slow, and it's calm, and he controls the game. And then Matias Jorgensen was the big signing this offseason. He is a center forward. So they could play him on one of the wings, but they want to find a way to get him on the field with Bradley Wright Phillips. You saw what we're calling a diamond in two in the last game. I think it's going to look like that. Or when we remember when Verone was at New York Red Bulls and they tried to start the season with Wright Phillips and him up top in a 4-2-2-2. Did I get enough twos in there?
Yeah, you got all twos in there.
Yeah. It's all a lot of twos. That's probably what we're going to see. To find a way to take some of the goal-scoring load off BWP, but also with those two forwards, you can start to create between them. Not everything has to come off a press, right? They can create opportunities to score for each other, and it changes the way the team can create chances and not just make them in games where they have to not have the ball. And for the USL team, which is different, but they have a stat where when the other team completes 60% of their passes, completes less than 60% of the passes, they've never won a game. So they need other teams to have the ball the way the Red Bulls exist. They're still trying to move away from that, and Chris Armas understands that the key is the playoffs and MLS Cup.
Have you gloated at all, Susanna?
Gloated.
About CCL fever and your lack thereof and
it's just a way of life for me, you know? Like
Susanna didn't celebrate as hard though when SKC came back from 5 goals down against Monterrey in the second leg.
When that happens, it's not gonna be as sweet for me. That is absolutely true. But I'm in a good headspace right now. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I get a little worried about you guys.
I hope that Kansas City is sharing your headspace. I hope that they're approaching this in a very similar way. And you
don't
know
you have to?
Well, after you come back from 5-0, you're probably top of the world, right? I mean, it's you're feeling great. You're going to the final against Tigres.
Yeah, bring on Tigres.
Listen,
yeah.
I won't try to hop on that party bus.
This is how deep the fever goes.
We're at hallucinations. Yeah. We're at hallucinations.
It's fever dream time. All the MLS action this week and all the coverage. MLSsoccer.com, at MLS on Twitter, MLS Facebook, MLS Match Day Central. We'll be there for that. Daniel Slayton is coming in to guest host with one Matt Doyle. So stay tuned for that. Before we go to the break, Martin Vasquez and GA Cup. Want to talk Gold Cup because the draw is out. The U.S. got a double disappointment cocktail. Trinidad and Tobago to remind us of Cuba, of course. Panama to remind us of the team that snuck into the World Cup instead of us.
I mean, to exercise the demons.
Yes.
I guess that is what I meant. Also, Guyana in there. From South America, by the way. We call it CONCACAF, but Guyana is actually in South America right next to Venezuela. A lot of people saying this is maybe the toughest group. Group D, U.S., Panama, Trinidad and Tobago, and Guyana. Canada got a tough group, Mexico, Martinique, and Cuba. Then you have Costa Rica, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Bermuda, and Honduras, Jamaica, El Salvador, Curaçao. What do you guys think about this tournament?
I'm all in on Guyana.
For one reason.
Whoa. Should have known.
Let's go. It's their first time in a major tournament in North America. So, I think the other cool part of this is that some of the games are being hosted in Jamaica, I believe, and Cuba?
Costa Rica.
Yeah.
But just the growth of that region and for them to be able to play a part as a host, I think it's going to be such a fantastic atmosphere and a great statement for how the game is growing in that area.
What should the U.S. expect in this? What should they be going
for? They have to win.
Yeah.
If you don't go into this tournament with the mentality of we're winning this whole thing, then, don't show up because you have to make a statement. And especially, I feel like this is honestly, no, I just feel like this, the way that this grouping shook out and the fact that we are going to play Panama, we are going to play Trinidad Tobago. If that doesn't motivate the hell out of you, then what will? I mean, you want to make a statement. You want the country to get behind you. You go in and you win this tournament.
I was fist pumping you just because I was on board completely.
That was like Tommy Thompson-esque right there.
Like, there should be no wishy-washy, like, oh, you know, if we have a moral victory, like, forget that. We missed the World Cup.
I'm wishy-washy.
Really?
Yeah, because we've won a Gold Cup. Even when we were bad, we've won a Gold Cup. That's not the benchmark for us anymore.
Sure, but isn't that a return to at least that sort of like level that we felt we were at in the past? You missed the World Cup. Mexico has a decent run. I think unequivocally they're the top of CONCACAF right now. It's an opportunity.
Didn't
with
we
first
win
teams.
The 2017 Gold Cup?
But you need to
and we
get
didn't
people
qualify
back
for the
on
2018
board.
World Cup. I don't disagree with
step
that.
Step by step.
But that is performance based. And that's not purely on wins. It's what does the team look like? How is Greg Berhalter putting players out there? How is he moving this thing forward? If you lose in the final against Mexico, it's devastating. If you lose in the group stage to Trinidad and Tobago and Panama, yeah, then we're in an issue. Then we have problems. But I don't know that the winning this tournament is everything for them. It has to look like something. It has to look like it's moving somewhere because we can win the Gold Cup. Like, the U.S. has good enough players while also, by the way, hosting all the knockout games, sometimes in tough stadiums. But still, it's not like we're going to Cuba. That would be different if we were in those environments and you were like, prove that you can win.
Well, isn't that the
on
whole
a
point
Wednesday
of win
afternoon?
It then?
Yeah,
so
no,
do it. So
I would
do
feel
it.
I would feel that way if we hadn't had the last 18 months of what we've gone through with
That's
this
fair.
Team. I think that the narrative around them has only strengthened the case for them to go into this tournament, to go into the Gold Cup with the sole purpose of winning the whole darn thing.
Yeah, look, cleanse the palate.
Yes,
you're back
absolutely.
In competitive competition for the first time
100%.
Since Cuba. Cleanse the palate. Look, I agree. They may not win it, and it wouldn't be devastating, but right now, all plans should be that we're going there to win, and we expect that we can do that. Gold Cup going down this summer. All the coverage right here. Canadian national team, they got the same goals, by the way. Alphonso Davies was a revelation in 2017. They've got a young, talented squad.
Mexico in the U.S. is the game they wanted. They want to test these players. They want to test them in hard situations, like, of course, Honduras and Honduras. This is as close as you can get. So this is a perfect draw for them, which their goal is, where are our young guys at? And they need to see the level they need to be at, because World Cup qualifying is what matters.
Three teams have won the Gold Cup. Mexico, the U.S., of course, and Canada got one back in the day. We'll see what happens in this tournament. We're going to break. On the other side, GA Cup with Martin Vasquez.
Are you watching the games or just looking at the stats? Email the show at extratime@mlssoccer.com, tweet at extratime, or text the Hot Take hotline with any questions or reactions.
Much better from Real Salt Lake. Plata, inroads, little tug. Salcedo! Yes!
Back now at Extra Time, driven by Continental. Sebastian Salcedo, you heard right there. Bofo, he's an RSL Academy product. And this weekend begins GA Cup action from Saturday to Saturday. All of the streaming information at MLSsoccer.com. We're sending Dave and Bobby off into the wilderness of Frisco, the youth developmental wilderness, to call all these games.
With Ben Bear, which is the hardest part.
That is going to be very difficult. RSL Real Monarchs head coach, as well as the overseer of their academy operations, Martin Vasquez, will join us to talk development in just 1 second. But before that, this is your time, man. Get on the soapbox. Tell people why they should watch, who they should watch, what's going down.
The reason you should watch is because anyone here who's talking to us about Paxton Pomykal and Brendan Aaronson and Jesus Ferreira and Tyler Adams and Weston McKinney, they could have been talking to us about them 4 years ago or 3 years ago or 2 years ago if they had watched GA Cup, because these are the guys you get to see. This is what all of these academies and coaches consider the preeminent tournament for them. They take players out of USL to play in this because of the chance to challenge them against the best players, not just in the U.S., not just in Canada, but in the world. You've got River Plate, you've got Olympic Lyon coming over, you've got Dynamo Zagreb, West Ham, which is considered the best academy in England, all of those clubs, Valencia, South American clubs, Liga MX clubs, coming over to play. And this is a chance to see young players who a lot of times dominate in their youth games throughout the U.S., and I'm sure Kalen can attest that in his PDL days, to go up now toe-to-toe against players who are bigger than you, faster than you, maybe have more professional experience, and challenge yourself. So this is where you learn a lot about those guys. And I remember seeing Paxton Pomykal for the first time in this tournament, and FC Dallas was playing an international team, and everyone looked a little hesitant, and he was out there just running things. And you're like, that's why this guy's going to make it to a next level, and then you see it come through on the back end. So this time, the big team that everyone's excited to see is Seattle Sounders. They're doing something similar to what NYCFC did 2 years ago and last year, which is they played a young team last year, a team that they, you know, had a lot of good players, and they won the Premier Division, which is the lower division. Now they've qualified for the Champions Divisions, and all those players are now U17, you know, at that age, and they're more experienced. We've heard Daniel Leva has already signed a first-team deal. Josh Atencio is a U.S. U17 international. Ray Serrano and Daniel Robles are big players on Tacoma Defiance that are coming to play in this. So Seattle's the one that everyone should watch out for and try and catch those games.
I remember going to watch Jordan Morris play when he was playing with the Academy in Houston, and a couple of guys on the first team went over to go check out his game because you kept hearing about him at that time. But I got to give it up to ETR guys. Like, you guys were talking about Pomykal probably 3-4 years ago. I was like, what are you guys talking about? Like, who is this guy, this wonder kid that you guys are talking about? But then now you're starting to see, you guys are ahead of the curve in a lot of ways.
It's a process, man. It's a process. Sometimes you need patience, and then you see these players come good, and that's where it really, really feels... You know, it's fulfilling. It's fulfilling to see them come and realize their dreams.
It's crazy to watch a guy play on a youth field with 20 people there and then turn on a TV and it's Weston McKinney playing with Schalke in the Champions League. The first time I saw him play was on a youth field on Toyota Stadium. And you're like, that kid's good. He's special. But you don't know where everyone stands and where things are. Now, over the years, because guys are starting to matriculate through, you can realize, okay, when I see him there, that's where he can potentially go.
All right, Martin Vasquez has guided some of those players through for Real Salt Lake. He is on the line now, head coach of Real Monarchs and overseer of their academy. Martin, how's it going?
Thank you. Thanks for the invite, guys.
All right, let's jump right into it with GA Cup on the horizon here. I'm mostly curious, Martin, what you think about this sort of critical mass, I want to call it, of academy players that are now getting their opportunities. We heard for years that it was going to take time for these investments to pay off. Are we finally starting to see the first sort of seeds come to growth and these players become MLS players, pro players?
Yes. And, you know, whatever you call it, a mess, I'm enjoying this mess. I'm loving this mess. And I'm being part of this mess. So I think we finally are seeing, what the hard work that has been put in the previous years, in the previous cycles of, you know, in the Soccer Federation and at the academy level. And, you know, the MLS investing, investing time, investing money in their academies.
What are we doing right now, Martin? We could get to the wrong side if we want to, but what are we doing right?
I think mainly the competition. You know, there's a lot of competition, meaningful competition nowadays. I think you know, the international competition is helping, you know, our young players accelerate their development. I think also, you know, the coaches. We have a lot of coaches that have, you know, invested time and money in their education. You know, we have coaches that are players, you know, that were players at their time and they play at a good level. I think, you know, we have, you know, the MLS investing time and money, and the Federation seeing a lot of, you know, not just national team players, but we're looking also at, you know, world-class players. And I think that one of the two main reasons why, you know, we're going to continue to make strides is that meaningful competition, that international competition. And, you know, the more we have our younger players, you know, their acceleration is going to grow. You know, sky is the limit, you know, when it comes to that.
You mentioned that competition, the Generation Adidas Cup coming up over the course of this weekend and next week. That's why we're talking about all of this. You've been a part of that tournament. You've got a team going down that qualified for the Champions Division. What does this tournament mean for the stage, the steps for your young players and their development?
It's a test. It's a challenge. I've been in it. I've been part of it. We've taken our, you know, teams to compete in the championship bracket, in the champions bracket, in the premier bracket. We have played against teams like, you know, Real Madrid, like River Plate, like Independiente, from Tigres, Pachuca, Pumas. I mean, we have played, you know, the New York Red Bulls. We have played, you know, DC in this competition, you know, competition that we don't have, you know, throughout the year or ever. And this is where our guys show up. This is where we see, you know, that how guys behave, how players behave at their age. And, you know, I'm a firm believer, a big believer of, you know, this tournament making a difference in a lot of our players, or in most of our players, or in all our players, because after a competition like this, you know, they behave differently. They're more confident. They're more composed. They're more mature. And that's, I think the support from MLS, from Adidas, when it comes to this, you know, GA Camp competition. I mean, they have done it right. This is a vision they've had, and it's been helping the players mainly, and, you know, for us coaches as well, you know, because we have to also, you know, prepare our teams to compete against the best competition there is.
So RSL's facilities, Martin, are incredible. And I was there when you guys were building the Zions Bank Academy Center and training facility and now the stadium for the Monarchs. But you've moved basically the operations of the academy, at least from a, you know, kids staying there, living there, eat, sleep, and soccer from Arizona up to Utah. How has the setup changed for you guys? What is the mandate right now for you as you take on that Real Monarchs job?
A lot of the, you know, things have been the same. You know, we have a residential program. We have dorms. We have a school on site. You know, so that part, we've been consistent since we started the academy program. What has changed has been the interaction with the first team, has changed the interaction with Monarchs. And now, you know, from being in a resort in Arizona, in an amazing place, you know, now we have a professional environment, a professional true environment. And what we see is, you know, players going to train with the 17s, the 19s, the Monarchs, the academies, and there's a lot of player movement. You know, the coaching staff, we know, you know, everyone. I mean, the interaction, you know, if one day soon you guys are around, it's what you see, you know, in every professional environment from top to bottom.
You are running that USL Real Monarchs team. How are you using that club, that level at the professional level but below Major League Soccer to help the development of players in your academy?
I mentioned, you know, before that the meaningful competition has been one of the best ways to accelerate the development of our players. I've seen our 17s, you know, when we push them to the 19s, you know, they get better. We're using the Monarchs as a bridge to the first team. We're using the Monarchs, you know, to bring in our best talent that we have with the U-17. Some of them are 15-year-olds, and they're training with, you know, our professionals, players from Monarchs. You know, so we have seen a huge improvement and growth in some of our players. I'm overseeing the academy, and I see, you know, players with the 17s that are ready for a challenge. The 19s, we've been starting three or four. They've been playing. They're consistently training, you know, with Monarchs or the first team. So now, you know, the next step for us is finding that special, you know, 15, 16-year-old and put them in that environment when we see that they're ready for the challenge. And, you know, I'm enjoying that. I'm seeing a huge difference, and, you know, we're going to use this team as, you know, a team to win, to compete, and to develop.
Take me inside your sort of evaluation when you're looking at a player, and we'll all watch GA Cup, or we'll watch youth games, or we'll watch a guy like Gianluca Busio get on the field at a young age. In young players, what are you looking for that says to you, hey, this guy could be a pro, this guy has immense talent, this guy has potential? What do you look for?
Consistency in their decision making, consistency in, you know, when with the ball, without the ball, they make good decisions. We want to see, you know, how they behave. If they behave normal, if they're not overwhelmed, you know, that's a great sign. That's a good sign. I mean, the technical ability, you know, when they're 15, when they're 16, we already, you know, see that they have the technical ability. You know, now it's the IQ. Now it's the understanding of the game. Now it's them making good decisions and, you know, not being overwhelmed. You know, we've seen young players go in the U-19s game in Monarchs, and you see them a little bit hesitant, a little bit nervous. They, you know, behave differently. We've also seen, you know, young players go play for Monarchs, go play for the U-19s, and they play better. They have this enormous confidence, and, you know, they embrace that challenge. So that's, you know, that's when we see, you know, a kid that could be special, and we keep challenging the player. That's what I look for, what we look for.
From a philosophical point of view, and I know you've been around this game in this country longer than I have, but you've seen over the last 10 years especially the change from, you know, using physicality and athleticism to starting to trust your feet and play out of the back and handle pressure a little bit better. Now when you have players go into big-time games against the teams you mentioned, River Plate, Real Madrid, there's that balance of believing you can break down a team and believing in your system, but also understanding the moment and when to handle pressure. How do you start talking to these kids after years now of drilling into them, you know, trust your feet, play at your back, trust your system, to understanding the moment and understanding how to maybe get through tough times?
Exactly like that, by talking about it. You know, we want a confident player. We want a player to, you know, respect the opponent, but we never want a player to be intimidated. You know, we have a style of play. We have a system. We play, you know, a formation. You know, so what we talk about is, you know, trust yourself, trust your team, trust your, you know, the style of play. You know, they're good players. You know, you are a good player, and, you know, when they get to that platform, when they're in that and on the same field, you know, you gotta also, you know, don't get intimidated. And this, you know, with training session, with the environment, you know, we need more games against River Plate, against Real Madrid. You know, I wish we could play every weekend. But we also have, you know, our competition. You know, we have MLS academies that are very competitive. We have non-MLS academies that are very competitive. And, you know, it's It's the way you behave. It's you, you know, having the confidence, and we continue to talk about it. But, you know, mainly you learn, you know, from this competition, from playoffs, because there's tension, because there's, you know, you behave differently, you know, and those are the moments that we take as learning moments, you know, to grow and to mature. So, again, you know, this we're looking forward to this GA Cup event. We've been very fortunate to play against some of the best teams, and, you know, some of our players now that played against Real Madrid, I mean, they're playing, starting for Monarchs, getting minutes with the first team. And, you know, we saw a behavior there that, you know, we're not overwhelmed, we're not intimidated, and that's why, you know, they're already at this level.
We know Bofo Saucedo. We know Justin Glad. We know Corey Baird. Martin, give RSL fans a little taste. Give them a name of someone you think is going to wow us, someone who maybe is coming through the academy.
We have a good group. You know, we have a good group going to this event. You know, Chris Garcia, Tommy Silva, Zach Farnsworth, Alejandro Silva. You know, I can name you 16 players. We rely on team play, but I think, you know, guys like Chris Garcia, guys like Bodie Davis, you know, they have, you know, or they have shown that they can do special things. So we're excited for them. We're excited for them to get this opportunity, and you know, we'll see how they behave. I'm giving you these names. They do well. You know, now you, as well as us, we see that, you know, they're going in the right direction. You know, I think they're going to grow a lot, well, you know, from this event, and we're going to see these players, you know, follow the footsteps of some of our guys, of the Justin Glass, of the Brooks Lennon, of the, you know, Bofos.
I have to ask you before I let you go, Martin. Those are the guys that signed with Real Salt Lake, that signed in MLS, but there are the Richie Ledesmas, the Sebastian Sotos, the Taylor Booths of the world that are out there signing with Bayern and Hanover and PSV. These are guys that you guys had a key part in developing. Is that a problem to see those players leave in that way from your position, or is that a successful story of development?
Well, you can see it. You can see it both ways. You can see it as, you know, as a success, and, you know, we can see it at times as an organization, as a club, and, you know, we are, you know, learning from those moments. You know, we can see it as a success because they came here and they were part of our academy for 3 years, you know, so, you know, for some of the top clubs in the world to give them that opportunity, you know, I think it's a great, you know, compliment. I mean, they can play at that level. Also, you know, that's what they wanted to do. It had nothing to do with them not wanting to play for RSL, but, you know, when the opportunity is there, you know, we talk about, you know, sky is the limit, and if the opportunity is there, they took it. For us, it's a success because we got them there. And we're going to continue to do that. You know, we want to keep everyone that we develop. It's going to be difficult, you know, at times because there are some, you know, big, you know, clubs in the world. And, you know, that's very attractive.
All right. Martin Vazquez, RSL, headed down to GA Cup this weekend in Frisco. Martin, good luck in USL season. Good luck doing what you do, developing players, man.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right. Big thanks to Martin for jumping on with us. We're going to break. On the other side, the mailbag. We'll be right back.
Are you watching the games or just looking at the stats? Email the show at extratime@mlssoccer.com. Tweet at extratime or text the Hot Take Hotline with any questions or reactions.
That looked like it might have gone out. And it's Ibrahimovic with a great goal. The ball stayed in play, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic took it off the chest and buried it into the top of the goal.
Back now in Extra Time, driven by Continental into the mailbag. 401-206-0MLS is the Hot Take Hotline. Please text us there. Email extratime@mlssoccer.com. I realized just now that we did not dig in the black trash bag, excuse me, of swag on Monday. So we'll do it twice next Monday. Remember, you can join our fantasy league if you'd like to do that. I'd also like to have a PSA. I want to do TBT on Thursdays with MLS legends, cult heroes, randos, whatever it may be. So send us players that you'd like us to reminisce on or celebrate or whatever it may be. Kind of like what we did with Kai Kamara. But also we have mail to start off. From me, Andrew in Brooklyn, Game of Thrones is back. Pretty big fan. Not a huge fan. I understand one of us has never seen it. Looking at Kaelin Carr here.
Counterculture.
But I know these two. I know these two are very into it. So I have this question for you guys. Who sits on the Iron Throne from MLS, if MLS was Game of Thrones? And also, who is Jon Snow? Who is the MLS Jon Snow? And I think we start with Jon Snow before we get to the big timer.
This one's obvious. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Who is Jon Snow?
So Goss and I, Goss and I have not revealed our picks for this, but I think we're
so
probably
what are the
thinking
attributes?
Of
what are the attributes of Jon Snow to help Kaelin Carr here?
So Jon Snow, super loyal to his land, like not going to go and leave. Mm-hmm. Staying there to fight through,
even when
no one's paying attention.
Yep,
it's not Kai.
Sorry,
comes back from the dead.
Yeah, that's a big
one. Returns.
Yeah. Maybe has some
one of the great,
blood.
One of the best fighters.
Yes,
like has skills.
Yes,
gotcha.
And therefore impresses people, and they're like, oh, whoa. Mm-hmm. Also has a giant wolf that follows him around. I don't know that one's relevant to who we're thinking about.
Dex McCarty has a couple of French bulldogs. I don't know if that doesn't really count.
Nah, that's not where we're going.
Do you want to reveal
your
grand
reveal? It is Landon Donovan.
Oh, God, no. I was going Jordan Morris.
No!
What?
Yeah.
I thought
we were on the same page.
I did
whole
too.
Time.
I totally
I
did.
I thought
too.
You guys were going to go Graham Zusi because, you know, like dedicated to his land.
Oh, but they also kind of look alike.
Yeah.
They look alike.
Landon stayed in MLS and helped raise the profile, fought for it. But everyone would be like, why?
I was thinking current. I was going
people
totally
would complain.
Current.
Well, Jordan Moore is not big enough legend yet to be Jon Snow.
What chapter of Game of Thrones is Landon playing indoor?
Whoa. Hey. We're only on the last season now, we don't know.
And when did Landon, it was the quitting the game for a little while to get his head right?
He went on walkabout.
And then he came back from the dead. Okay, explain the Morris.
The loyal to the land, the whole Seattle connection.
Had the injury that took him out for the year.
He's back, and he's like the celebrated son. Yeah. And like he's somebody that was sort of underappreciated for a while, especially by you kind of forgot about him.
Yeah, kind of got some stick. Was super hyped.
I see the parallels
Snow
in the journey.
Literally got stabbed in the back by the people in his group. That is Landon Donovan. Landon Donovan's taken swords from U.S. soccer media for like 15 years.
I don't disagree. I was just thinking more.
LD.
I was going more.
I think both
current.
Of them work. Who sits on the
also,
throne?
Also, they're like similar in stature.
That's
yeah,
true.
That part's
he's
true.
Very like he's no, very
got
Jordan
broad Moore. Shoulders.
Jordan Morris could walk the wall.
Yeah,
right. Game of Thrones.
Who sits on the Iron Throne?
Iron
Does that
throne.
Mean who's Cersei?
I'm saying
sure.
Everybody competes for it.
Zlatan.
Who else could be in the Zlatan category?
So my thing about
Josie, I think, is there. I think Josie could have a chance.
Why?
Because he's not afraid of anything. Because he's willing to, he performs in the big
moments. Oh, this is generic sit on the Iron Throne.
Yeah, he performs in the big moments, so you have that, battle that decides it all. Josie's showing up, man. He might, take out half your army.
Yeah.
Zlatan did not show up in his big moment. Kaelin Carr's making a phone call. Right. Oh, my bad. I think Josie could compete in that way. Is there anybody else, though, that can keep Zlatan off?
Maybe Joseph.
Maybe Joseph, yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty cutthroat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I also think, and I feel like this is a good one. This is a good Thrones analogy. Lucho Acosta is Arya Stark. How do you feel about
that? He's a faceless man.
But the little assassin.
Yeah, for sure.
Gotcha.
You know?
And he's out training and no one's paying attention.
Yes.
And then Rooney shows up and now it's Lucho.
I was
killer.
Really that one came to me and I felt really good about it.
I like that one.
Kaelin's been let's get one piece of mail in here because I feel bad.
So we got a lot of people who are upset about SKC losing by a lot to
Monterrey. But they haven't lost. They just came back, obviously, tonight.
Unreal comeback. One of the greatest moments in my life. Some people ask questions, basically, how can this get better? So some people talked about more friendlies against teams. Some people talked about more DPs. But Glenn Casa sent us an email, which I thought was interesting, which is basically, why are we talking about selling our best players in Major League Soccer as a good thing? We have lauded on this show that MLS becoming a selling league to the top teams in the world is a positive, But if we weren't selling those players, wouldn't we be closer to League MX teams right now? Does what's gone on in CCL this year or last year or forever change your perception of this?
I think that that is coming from a place that I don't quite grasp, because if you look at, for instance, Miguel Miron, they invested $17 million into Pity. They invested $15 into Ezequiel Barco. Not all of those are going to work out. They re-signed Joseph Martinez. So they are investing. But if you want to get that bigger, widespread spend, if you want to attract the best prospects in the world and the best players in the world, well, then you're going to have to build a profile and you have to build investment from somewhere. And I know people want to be like, hey, just owners, just throw all your money into it. And, you know, some do, and a lot do, to be honest with you, to keep this league afloat and to sign the best players they can. But you also need return on your investment in the academy to sustain that spending, and also to have Paxton Pomacles that change the game.
CCL is just one metric. It's just one way of looking at it. I guarantee you the impact that Almirón has gone by selling him, as far as the global perception of MLS, is far more than any semifinal loss to Sporting suffers.
Yep, no doubt about it. Okay, we have no more time, unfortunately. We'll dig into more of this later on. Big thank you to Susanna, Kaylin, and Dave, and also Martin Vasquez for joining us. We're getting out of here. We will see you on Monday, everybody. Enjoy the action. That comeback, incredible, yeah?
Loved it.
We'll be right back.